Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I am your host, Shane Bacon. Yes, it is I. A fun one this week. Aaron Oberholzer, who joined the Clubhouse, a former PGA Tour winner turned broadcaster. We chatted about a lot of stuff. We talked about Jordan Spieth's quiet offseason, Anthony Kim, and how the internet sensation's career has mirrored that of Aaron Oberholzer's. What is more likely, two more green jackets for Jordan Spieth over the course of his career, or one more for 46-year-old Phil Mickelson? It was a fun conversation. Aaron always has a lot to say about golf and that around it. First things first, this week's episode is brought to you by Swing Juice. And guys, I've got good news for you. Swing Juice now has koozies. Your favorite t-shirt ideas are now emblazoned on koozies, and they're only $4. $4. The t-shirts are great. Now the winter months are upon us, and you don't want those hands to get cold. It's very important to keep your hands warm when you're playing golf, and Swing Juice has you covered. You can get a koozie with golf and hip-hop on it, and again, it's $4. That's the price of a draft beer at your local club as you finish up your round. Toss in your golf bag, have it on the ready. Use the offer code BACON at checkout. You'll save 20% at swingjuice.com. Go check it out right now. And as you are listening to this podcast, I am headed to Las Vegas, Nevada for the Tour Top Golf Finals. Yes, Top Golf Tour is in its first year, and we are getting close to the end. The finals are this weekend in Las Vegas. There's going to be some great players. I think the thing that surprised me the most about the Top Golf Tour is how many guys that do this for a living are involved in it. They saw this opportunity. They saw a chance to go out there and earn some serious dough. 50 grand for the winning team will be handed out on Sunday at the Top Golf in Las Vegas. And they went, hey, let's take a chance. Well, we were out of the Scottsdale Top Golf Tour regional championship trying to advance to Vegas. And these guys were unbelievable at how they were peppering the target. I was actually out at the Top Golf over the week in Scottsdale. Every time I go to Topgolf, I want to go back. It's like bowling. It really is. Every time I go bowling, I think to myself, why don't we bowl more? And I say very similar stuff when I go to Topgolf. But enough of me, a long and lengthy conversation with Aaron Oberholzer. This is a guy that won on the PGA Tour, was very competitive. If you look at his run in the early 2000s, he was finishing in the top 15, top 20, top 10 in major championships, had a chance to win a couple of other events, lost in a playoff, and of course injuries sidelined him and eventually had him hang him up. But he's a great conversationalist, a great dude. I love getting a chance to talk with him, play some golf with him. So up next, Aaron Oberholzer here on the Clubhouse. And we now welcome into the Clubhouse a man of many talents, former PGA Tour champion turned broadcaster, who could be seen really all over the place, Golf Channel, PGA Tour Live, and much more. Aaron Oberholzer is here, and I actually got the name right. I think I nailed it that time.
You did well, my man. You did well. Thank you very much for having me on. I'm excited. First time I've done this with you.
It is the first time. I will say, for people that didn't catch our first experience on PGA Tour Live, and I think it was my first PGA Tour Live event that I did, I had to introduce you. You were on the course, and I absolutely botched your last name, and you gave me a great line. You said, my last name is like talking with marbles in your mouth, and it at least broke a little bit of the tension after I completely hacked your name maybe 12 seconds into the broadcast.
Ryan Bird does the exact same thing, and he has to spell it out phonetically on the prompter at Golf Channel sometimes. He's got it down now, but for the first 4 or 5 months that he and I worked together, he had a tough time saying it too. And it's a difficult last name to say. It's not a lot of there's a lot going on. That's for sure.
For sure. Well, I ask everybody that comes on, and it's early. It's 7 o'clock in Arizona. You've got to make a flight here in a little bit. But I ask everybody that comes on, first question is, what have you had to eat today? I know you're an early riser, so I'm assuming you've had something. So I'll ask you, what have you had to eat today?
I haven't had anything, actually. Not a thing. For me, sleeping in is till 6:30, and I was able to stay in bed till 6:30. The boys got up a little earlier, but they went and read some books and left us alone as much as possible because we needed some sleep as my wife was up late packing last night for the trip that we're taking up to San Francisco today. So I haven't had a thing yet. But when I do get off of this and I do go into the kitchen and grab something, it'll probably be some sort of egg dish.
egg dish, and of course you can also
some sort of egg dish. Yeah, eggs with something. I'm a big fan of protein in the morning.
Well, you've this is the off season of golf, but you've been jet setting. You've been all over the place. Is this the busier time of your year? Or is it just more you have to go to more exotic places?
Well, it's more I have to go to more exotic places. The busiest time of year for me is probably from the Masters through the playoffs, like it is for everybody else. As soon as major season hits for broadcasters, it's a pretty daunting run for some of us. I don't think Brandel's any different. I don't think Frank – I know Frank Nabilo isn't any different. He works as hard, if not harder, than anybody at Golf Channel because he's got the CBS gig as well. So or he does some CBS shows. So a lot of us are working our big kind of season is from the Masters all the way through the playoffs, the PGA Tour playoffs, so the FedEx Cup playoffs. So for me – I try to space it out. I don't do as many days as those guys do just because I've got two young boys and I just don't want to do that many days because I don't want to be away from them so much. So for me, I try to space it out as much as possible. But when I look at my schedule going into next year, I'm like, man, look at that again from March through or from April through September. I'm just stacked. So that's just the way it goes. And really hard. I'm really stacked in April, May, and June. I've got a run of something like 7 or 8 out of 10 weeks or 8 out of 10 weeks or something like that that I'm doing either on the golf course for Golf Channel or in studio for Golf Channel or a live from for Golf Channel. So it's a very busy – it almost seems, honestly, when I get to go to Asia that's a partial vacation. Honestly, I miss my family dearly, obviously. But to get to go over there, first of all, I love going to Asia. But to get to go over there, it almost feels like, oh, okay, I'm not running around. I can actually do, I can do 2 weeks in a row of on-course work and I can get into a rhythm. Sometimes it's tough as a broadcaster when you do two different things like I do and you're jumping from on-course to in-studio, on-course to in-studio, because they're two very different disciplines. And they have different, very different requirements.
Well, you know, you're talking about being busy and not being busy. I wanted to transition into some of the players, some of the bigger names. I mean, you know, it's an interesting point right now in the wraparound season because there's golf on, but there's not a lot of golf to talk about. And I know that doesn't really make a ton of sense, but a lot of the big players are taking time off. Jordan Spieth is the first person I want to talk about, a guy we really haven't discussed much the last 2 or 3 months, even at the Ryder Cup. I would say he was the eighth or ninth or tenth storyline, really. I mean, behind the shadow that was Patrick Reed. This is a guy that has decided this year, after two wins and people saying, what happened to Jordan Spieth, which was crazy, he's decided to cool it off this offseason. He's only playing the Australian Open in the World Challenge. And then, of course, last year, this guy was playing in everything. He was going to every event all up into January. Do you see this being an enormous benefit for Jordan Spieth headed into 2017, considering that, you know, say it let down or not, the season probably wasn't exactly what he wanted in 16?
Yes. I think it was a good experiment for Jordan to do this at a young age to figure out what he can and can't take. All of us have breaking points. For Vijay Singh in his early 40s to mid-40s, the guy could play 27, 28 events, and he could play well, and he reached number one in the world doing that. Just the other week, I was in China, and I had a great discussion with Patrick Reed. And Patrick's tired. He's flat out exhausted because he plays 30 plus events a year. Even at his age, even at his young age, he's tiring himself out. So he needs to rest. He said the Ryder Cup smoked me. You know, it took a lot out of me. And of course, look at the emotional and physical energy that he put forth to help win that cup. The man deserves a break. There's no doubt. And he needs to take one, for his body. And Jordan Spieth is figuring that out too. Where is his breaking point? All of us have breaking points where we go, man, I can't do it anymore. I've got to chill. This is my set number of events. This is how I'm going to do it. And that's where I'm going to go. Tiger learned it early. Tiger was prepared to play and prepared to win every event that he showed up to because he was fresh. And he had so many other things going on outside as far as commitments go, outside that I can't even fathom what he had to do during his off week. His off weeks probably weren't that much of an off week, because either he was practicing or he was flying somewhere to do something for a sponsor or for an endorser, or for someone who endorsed him. So it was, or he endorses, excuse me. So it was, for Jordan, it's good to find that kind of ground with the schedule where you're not tiring yourself out, but you're sharp. You're not tiring yourself out. You're not unsharp with your game, but that nice kind of fine line where you ride where you're sharp for every event that you possibly can play in. And that's where Tiger was, and that's why I think where Tiger was successful for a lot is that he didn't overschedule himself, and I think Jordan's learned that.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy that played 27 events, Jordan Spieth, in 2014. He played 21 PGA Tour events in 2016. Do you see these top players, the Rorys, the Jason Days, the Jordan Spieths, scaling this thing back even more? Could you see them in maybe 3, 4, 5 years playing in 16 events or 18 events?
Well, probably not that. I might see 18 to 20. Heck, I only played in 22. Now, you got to look at it this way too, Shane. These guys make a lot of cuts, so they're playing a lot of golf. So in that regard, and they're contending. So when you make a lot of cuts, not only are you putting a lot of physical stress on your body, but these guys are top players in the world, so they're contending a lot. So they're putting a lot of mental stress on their body. So because they're constantly in the battle to win a golf tournament, and everything ratchets up. If you're just fighting to make the cut, that's one thing. You make the cut, you go on to the weekend. Well, it's kind of like you go out there and you're playing a Saturday Nassau with your buddies. If you just made the cut by one or two, it doesn't, let's see what we can do today. And you play with no pressure, and you go out there, and half the time the guys will shoot 64 or 65 and get themselves into contention going into Sunday. And then the pressure ratchets up, tenfold from what you played on Saturday. And the guys really feel it then. But when you're not contending on the weekends and you're constantly in that 40th to 45th place, I'm not saying that there's not pressure and that you don't feel it, because later in the year, if you've constantly done that, you're probably lower on the points list and you need to get some points, so you're feeling the pressure that way. But these guys, they don't give themselves they give themselves a lot of chances to win, which takes it out of you week in and week out. So I didn't give myself a ton of chances to win, but I made a lot of cuts when I played, especially in 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007. I didn't miss a ton of cuts, so I played a lot of golf on the weekends. And I can tell you what that does to your body. It wears you out. And I only played between 22 and 24 events when I played. So I think it's smart for these guys, if you play a lot of golf, if you know you're going to make a lot of cuts, if you know you're going to contend a lot, that to really make sure that you conserve your energy and conserve yourself for throughout the year. And that's what I think. That's a smart thing that I think these guys could do. And I'd love to see Patrick Reed do more of it. I know the guy loves to play. But I would love to see Patrick do more of it, because I think it would help him out a lot in the long run.
And especially with these season-ending events, it seems like they're all jam-packed, especially this year, of course, with the Olympics. You've got so many events that are important, jam-packed at the end of your season. You've got to be sharp for weeks on weeks on weeks. So it seems like at least allowing yourself early in that season to take some time away would be an important move. And I like what Jordan Spieth's doing right now, because there's no reason to go out there and beat yourself up in November, December, January, when you know that the events that you really want to win start right around April.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So these guys know that they've got the firepower to do it when they need to do it. They just need to keep themselves sharp and keep themselves upright and not get worn out. So you have to create with this schedule, because there's year-round golf now, which is good and bad. Good for us in the media, because we got something to talk about constantly.
Right.
Bad for as a player, because, well, you got to figure out when your off season is, because everybody needs an off season. Do you not play well on the West Coast traditionally? Do you take January and February off, and we'll see in the Florida swing? Do you take October and November off, or November, December off? Everybody needs a couple of months to kind of decompress and regroup, go see your trainer, get your body right, and recoup for whenever their next season is going to start. I think it's important for any athlete. Every athletic endeavor. And people who don't think golf is athletic, I want to slap them. It's extremely athletic, and it beats your body up so bad at the professional level. Those guys need an off season too, just like baseball, just like football, just like basketball, just like hockey, just like the other major sports. Everybody needs an off season for their body to recover. So it's just up to the golfer to decide when he needs his breaks. When he, you know, then that's the nice thing, because it's not a forced off season. It's not like, you know, well, I got to go play the West Coast. So it's kind of, you can make it work to your advantage. If you're traditionally not a good player in Florida, like me, I would say, I'll see you in April. I'm out of here, and I'm done in March. I'm not picking up a club in March, you know, and I'll pick up a club at the beginning of April and play the Houston Open, start at the Houston Open. So if I was still playing, that's what I would do. I don't traditionally play well in Florida. So I'd play all the West Coast, take Florida off, and then maybe take another month off somewhere in the season, maybe take November off or something like that. But it's hard, because when you have these free money events, and now you're going to have three next year in CIMB, Malaysia, Korea, that's been added, and HSBC, those are all going to be 78 player fields with free money and free FedEx Cup points. Those are hard to pass up. So when those are hard to pass up, now you've got a quandary that's been created, where you have to figure out, all right, well, that was normally my off season, but now I can't pass up free points in FedEx Cup because I can get a head start. So it's the PGA Tour is doing a good job of making it hard for players to want to take time off, because there's just too many carrots on the edge of that pole.
Well, the end of the year was owned by somebody that didn't have a great season for the most part, Rory McIlroy. You know, we saw a great play-in at the Irish Open, but really not the season Rory wanted. And then all of a sudden, he switched gears. Do we put a little too much stock on guys that end seasons, especially as we talk about this wraparound season, that end PGA Tour seasons, do we put a little too much stock in these guys carrying it over into the next PGA Tour season, given the gap that we have in time? Because Jason Day wins the PGA Championship, has a great end of his season last year, and, you know, he played great early, but you know, the success didn't carry over maybe into like the majors and such. And then the year before, Rory goes back to back in the majors and then, you know, hasn't won another one since. And I feel like sometimes we look at what they did at the FedEx Cup and what they did at the PGA Championship. We almost expect that to continue when, you know, you've got to play well for 4, 5, 6 months just to get into the next season.
Yeah. I think that this game and will and forever is and will forever be a game of ebbs and flows, period. And you're going to find players that are going to ride hot streaks, and those hot streaks can last depending on the player. Those hot streaks could last for months, like we saw Jordan Spieth with in 2015, where he had an epic year that literally lasted the entire year, where he was in a flow. And that was, you know, that proved to be, at this point, a career year. He might duplicate it in the future. But we also see guys have ebbs and flows with their games and what they're working on and so on and so forth. And so, guys, you're always in a state of flux as a professional. You're always trying to find the next magic bullet to make your game that much better. And when you do that, you also risk putting yourself into a little bit of a lull. And I'm not saying a slump, a lull. Like right now, you can almost argue that Billy Horschel, after winning the FedEx Cup in 14, he's in a little bit of a slump, but I would still call it mostly a lull. The guy hasn't fallen off the map completely. Okay, he's still there, even though some people would argue he hasn't won. That's falling off the map. I disagree. I just think that you're always going to have that with this game. And again, that's why Tiger was so special. He never had lulls. A lull to him was a top five. We don't see that with guys these days. We see more normalcy with guys in their games. A lull for a guy is, well, he missed a cut and maybe he finished T20 to T40 a few weeks in a row for the best players in the world. Or, you know, and then all of a sudden, boom, comes up and wins a tournament and then gets on a run for a month. I think that's what you're going to see. It's really hard to maintain that consistency. Ask anybody who's been at the top of the game. Ask Jason Day. He knows what it's like. Ask Dustin Johnson. Ask Jordan Spieth. It's very hard to maintain that type of consistency over a long period of time. And I do believe that to kind of get off into a little tangent, but I do believe that Tiger made it difficult for everybody else, as he has in so many things, because he set the bar so high. And these guys, you can't expect anybody to maintain that kind of excellence over that type of period anymore. I don't believe so. I think that those days are gone. But that leads to more parity, and I like parity on the PGA Tour. I enjoy parity. I love seeing a bunch of great players rather than one massively dominant player. Whereas some people would rather see one massively dominant player come in every week and just roll roughshod over people. But I'd rather see a bunch of really good young players, which is what we have now. And I'm really excited about the PGA Tour season and the PGA Tour season to come and future seasons to come.
Well, and that goes into the next question I had. You know, we saw a kind of a weird major season this last year, you know, with some of the names we expected to play well and to contend and to win. And we have all these new champions, you know, and, you know, while Dustin Johnson was not a surprise to some, Danny Willett was, Jimmy Walker might have been to some people.
For sure.
Are there a couple names that come to mind, considering you mentioned it, the talent pool is so deep on tour right now, and there's so many talented players. Are there a couple names that come to mind that you see, not prediction-wise, but just you think could have a breakout season over the next 18 months, win that major, win two or three times on tour? Are there a couple you think rise above the rest?
I've been high on Brooks Koepka for the last couple of years, since he was playing on the European Tour, actually. I think the guy's game is incredible. I think he hits a golf ball that most guys can't hit as far as the sound it makes, the trajectory it launches at, the power he has. The talent level in that man is every bit as much as, in my opinion, as Dustin Johnson. He's just got to put it all together. And that's the hardest thing, is finding the weaknesses, curing the weaknesses, like Dustin Johnson did with the wedge play, and look what Dustin did. Brooks has got to do the same thing. I do believe Brooks has a 2-3-4 win season in him. There's no doubt, in my opinion, he does. With his power, with his precision, his game, putting stroke is beautiful. That he can win a major, that he can win multiple times on the PGA Tour. That's the guy that stands out in my mind. Patrick Reed is another guy that he's an interesting, not that he hasn't had breakout seasons, but his consistency continually gets better and better each year. And I do believe Patrick Reed has the game to win a major or two. There's no doubt. And I'm waiting for Patrick Reed to really put the ball striking together consistently, as it's been creeping up consistency-wise, getting better and better and better, so he doesn't have to rely so much on his pitching and putting, which is stellar, to say the least. When that part of his game becomes more and more consistent, as it keeps growing more consistently, I think he's going to have multiple win seasons and contend in more major championships. But he's got to get that driver a little bit more consistent, especially at the major championships, because that driver is the one thing that kind of lets him down. The two things you have to do well at a major championship, at most major championships, you got to put the ball and play off the tee, and you got to putt well. He does one of those things extremely well, one of the best in the world at, in putting and chipping, but he's got to get the other part of it down. And when he does that, he's going to contend. So those two guys I look for breakout seasons as far as major championships are concerned. Young guys that I like, you know, I was just doing some reading on this Grayson Murray coming off the web tour. I think Grayson, now not that he's going to contend for a major or have a multiple win season on the PGA Tour, but those types of guys, these powerful young kids coming off the web tour, he's one guy that I'm really going to watch for closely this year, kind of like I did when Finau came out. I want to see what a guy like that does on the PGA Tour. He was a very talented young junior, and he's won pretty much at every level up through the ranks. And so now he's on the PGA Tour, so I look forward to seeing what that young man can do as well as far as a breakout season. Maybe he gets a win on the PGA Tour in his first season out there. I might go out on a limb and pick him for Rookie of the Year. I got to do a little bit more research on the rookies this year, as I haven't kind of gotten into that just yet, as I'm in my off season right now for about 4 or 5 weeks. And I'll get back to you on that team, but I like Grayson Murray for sure as far as a young player is concerned.
Well, you know, I wanted to switch gears a little bit and just kind of talk about you as a player. You know, you won at Pebble Beach. You had, I was looking over some of your stats. It was crazy. You had a stretch there where you were contending in a lot of major championships, and injury sidelined you eventually, you know, made you hang up your spikes. The internet, the people that I tend to talk to, have this obsession with a guy named Anthony Kim. Anthony Kim was an incredible talent. He came on the scene. He really changed the youth culture in golf before the Rorys and the Jasons and the Jordans and the Rickies.
He did. He was kind of the next Tiger.
Yeah,
and to a certain extent, a smaller version.
Yeah, and injury has sidelined him, and now same thing. I mean, you're not going to see him back out there playing golf again. What do you know about Anthony Kim battling injuries and eventually making the decision, a similar decision that you had to make, where you said, I'm going to pick policy over play. I'm going to pick, you know, taking advantage of something I did years ago, a smart decision for Anthony Kim, over going out there and trying to battle and make my money at a game that I used to be really, 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 really good at, and now I'd rather kind of, you know, take a step aside and take advantage of something else.
Well, it's hard. It's a very hard decision. To be quite frank with you, though, the decision is made easier based on if you were smart enough to buy a big enough policy and you had deep enough pockets to buy a big enough policy, basically a career-ending policy on your body, which covered everything. So if you were smart enough and had the deep pockets enough as a player and the wherewithal to, you know, spend – you know, $100,000 in premiums a year to get a really big policy, like a large seven figure to eight figure policy on your body, then if you don't feel like you can do it anymore, the decision's a lot easier because you don't have to work, especially if you're a single guy and you're not living crazy.
Right.
But if you had a smaller policy, or your policy wasn't written properly and you didn't get to take your policy out, well, then the decision's easy. You either suck it up and you go play golf as best you can with the injury that you have, or it's quite simply you just have to go out and get in the real world and get a job. It's that simple. The game owes you nothing, and the world owes you nothing. That's why if you have the means as a player, you want to protect yourself. And Anthony Kim was smart in protecting himself with what he did. And when you tear a thumb like he did, I know he's had a thumb injury, left thumb. That's brutal. That's a hard one to come back from. And in his defense, playing Nassau's with your buddies on Saturday and playing 3 days a week, I can do that too. That's no problem. But when you get out there and you have to grind it out in a practice round, in a pro-am, and then 4 days of competition, and then you hop on a plane, you maybe take the day off Monday, and you do it all over again the next week, and you got to do that for 2-3 weeks in a row, and then you maybe take 1 week off or 2 weeks off, and then you got to do it for another 3 or 4 weeks in a row, that wears your body out. And those parts that have been surgically repaired, they break down the quickest. They break down quicker. They're the weak points now in your body. And maybe those are the new 100% on those parts are 70 or 80%, hopefully 90, but sometimes they're even less than that. And they wear down a lot faster. And you might have a ball count, so you can't practice the way you want to practice. You can't put in the hours. You have to adjust everything. It's very difficult. And some people, like myself and like Anthony potentially, we don't make it back, because the injuries are just too much. You know, on top of that, he had an Achilles injury. So I remember talking to Greg Rose at the TPI in 2005, before I had any issues with my hands, or maybe even 2004 it was. And I was hitting balls, and I was working on something on the 3D monitor with him, and they were checking my sequence or whatever. And we were talking, and he says to me, he goes, Aaron, I don't know how it got brought up, but we were like, oh, I remember we were talking about Patrick Moore, who won the money list when I came out on the web.com tour. I finished second. He won the last event, won the web.com tour championship, and passed me by, I think, I don't know how many dollars, but passed me by some little bit of money, and ended up winning the web.com to her money list. And on top of that, got a 3-win promotion. Three weeks into his PGA Tour career, he hurts his neck and was pretty much never to be heard from again. We were talking about Patrick. And Patrick says to me, or excuse me, Greg says to me, says, man, it's brutal what's happened to Patrick. I said, yeah, I know. And you know, as a player, you say, yeah, you know, but you don't know and you can't feel empathy for the guy when you're in the middle of the battle. It's hard to do that until you've been outside the battle and you know what the guy's gone through. And now that I know what he went through, and because I've gone through it, it is brutal to have your career end that way. But the quickest way off the tour, what he told me in regards to Anthony Kim and myself and Patrick, the quickest way off the tour are neck injuries and hand injuries. You got a hand, any kind of hand injury, any kind of extremity injury to your hand or your elbow or your neck, those are really hard to come back from because of all the force that goes into those areas. And he's right. And Anthony might be, AK might be having the same issue with his hand where he just can't do it days in a row, weeks in a row. Patrick Moore had to call it a day, and I've had to call it a day for the same reason. So, you know, injuries are part of sport, and you have to, it's hard to accept at times. I know for the longest time for me, it was really hard to accept that I couldn't play the game at the level that I once did. And that I knew I still could, because I could still go out and play golf today at my club, and I can go out and hit these shots that I go, oh man, I know I can still do it.
Still got it.
But it's still, yeah, oh yeah, still, that's exactly, 41 years old, you know, 3, 4, 5 years removed from the game at a high level. And I go, still got it. And then you think and you think and you think and you go, no, man, I can't do it. I can't do it for 22 to 25 events a year anymore. That's the realization that's very difficult to come to for a lot of us. And it took me some time to come to the realization that I can't do it anymore at that level. Can I still do it when you and I go out and play, or I go play with my buddies here in Scottsdale or at the club? Yeah, I can still go out and shoot the occasional round in the mid-60s to high-60s. But to do that 4 days in a row and to do that weeks on end, no, that's a pipe dream now for me anymore. I can't do that anymore.
Yeah, is insurance policies, is this a thing? I mean, is every good player, every big player now have something like this? Rory, Jordan, all these guys?
They should, Shane. If they don't, they should. Because if I was put in front of a room of young players coming off the web tour, we used to have this symposium for young players coming out of tour school that you'd have to attend. And they'd always have a veteran player come and speak to the guys about what to expect, so on and so forth. And they asked me to come and speak at the symposium over in La Quinta one year when the new set of guys got their cards. And I was honored, but it was weird because I'm only 2 years removed from it. So I don't really know much. So I don't know what to tell the guys, to be honest with you. But now, if I could be put in a room with those guys, oh my gosh, they'd fall asleep because they'd get sick of listening to me talk. Because I would have so many cautionary tales for them. What to do, what not to do, where to stay, where not to stay, you know, so on and so forth. But the biggest message I would say is, I don't care how much money you have right now or how much money you're going to make, buy yourself at least, a seven-figure insurance policy, at least a $1 million insurance policy.
Right.
Up it when you get to, but pay those premiums, even though it absolutely stinks to get that bill and to pay those premiums when you think you're bulletproof and you're never going to get hurt. One day it might really save you,
right,
to a certain extent.
All you'd have to do is show video of 2001 Tiger and 2012 Tiger and say, look, it happens to the best of us. You know, I mean, this injury stuff we can't avoid.
Totally right. He's definitely one guy. Now, obviously, he made enough money where he doesn't need to worry about that. But guys who've only played like me, like 4 or 5 years and made a good living, but didn't make $20 million on tour, $15 million, you know, and then they were cut short of their careers to continue, you know, those policies help. And I would implore every player as soon as they get their tour card to buy a whole body policy from Lloyd's of London or from whoever you choose to buy it from, and insure your body when you're young and healthy, because as you get older, it's going to be tougher for them to want to insure you, especially after you've had surgery.
Right.
Those premiums just get higher and higher.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole. It's in the hole.
And a reminder, everybody, Swing Juice is now making koozies. Yes. What golfer doesn't like a nice koozie? I see this trend popping up in clubhouses around the country. And now here on the Clubhouse Podcast, koozies are only $4 at Swing Juice. And they also have a 4-pack of koozies. It's just $13. That's the price of a really, really fancy IPA if you live in San Francisco or New York City or Chicago. $13 for 4 koozies. Along with that, I'm preparing myself for Abandoned Dunes bachelor party trip. My bachelor party. And I'm picking a Swing Juice shirt each week that I really like. I'm highlighting my favorite Swing Juice shirt of the week. And I figured it was apropos to put up the Wind Blows t-shirt. We're going to send a link out on the Clubhouse Pod Twitter account. Wind Blows. It's just a simple t-shirt, and it's a reminder to all of that. While wind is something we have to battle on the golf course, wouldn't we much rather have a calm day out there? The t-shirts are very reasonable, and you can save 20% if you use the offer code BACON at swingjuice.com. They have koozies. They have pages after pages after pages of t-shirts that you'll want. They make great holiday gift ideas, great holiday gifts for people that have everything, for the golfer that has everything in their life, that doesn't need clubs, doesn't need balls, doesn't need a new rangefinder, just needs something. Go to swingjuice.com, use that offer code BACON, and you will save 20%. Get yourself a koozie. Get yourself a couple. Well, a couple of quick hitters, and I'll let you go. First things first, you've told me when we played, you said, I was a confident, cocky player when I was young. And I wanted to ask you, what's more important for a young kid, a talented young kid, you know, a great college player, great amateur player, what's more important as they turn professional, their talent or their confidence?
You can't have one without the – I think you can't have one without the other. This is a great question, because I was just texting a young man who is going to college next year and hasn't made a decision yet. And he's one of the top juniors in the country. And we're very good family friends with their family and him. And I've known him since he was 6 years old. And he and I were texting back and forth, and I told him, you know, he was like, well, all these programs have their, I love all the coaches and I love all the schools and so on and so forth. And I told him, I said, he goes, there's two coaches in particular though, that really, I think might fit my style. And I said, bingo. And he said, what do you mean bingo? And I said, your style.
Right.
Great coaches don't try to change who you are. They work with what you have, and they recruited you because of who you are. And if a coach ever tries to change you and change your innate being who you are, you need to run for the hill as fast as you possibly can. And that's what I told him. I said, you need to get out, and you need to get out fast. Because you need to protect, I told him this. I told him, you need to protect your talent. You need to protect your talent. Don't let anybody tell you that you're doing the wrong way. There are plenty of guys who have come up through the ranks on the PGA Tour that had college golf coaches that didn't know what they were doing because they had great filters. I think that kids need to have a good filter these days, understand that they're good, stay humble about it. Don't be, stay humble to a certain extent about it. Be cocky, but don't be so outwardly cocky that people don't like you.
Right.
But understand that you have talent and protect that talent. That's what I would tell young kids today. And then, yeah, because you're protecting that talent and because you have that filter, you have that confidence. So one breeds the other, in my opinion. So don't listen to people who are trying to change you unless you know they absolutely have your best interests in mind. And even though they might have your best interest in mind, they might be wrong. Not everything that a coach or a teacher is going to tell you is going to make you a better player. That's why you have to have a good, filter. You have to understand what you can and can't do, what your body can and can't do, and what you are comfortable with. You know, I'll never forget what Paul Azinger told me when I was a rookie on tour. He said, if a teacher doesn't make you better in the first 5 to 10 minutes of a lesson, run. it's obviously not working.
A zingerism.
That's how talented you are when you make the PGA Tour, no matter who you are, whether you're the 125th or 150th to 150th guy, or you're number one in the world. You're a talented, talented player to make the PGA Tour. You got to protect the talent.
You do a ton of on-course reporting. Your producer comes up to you and says, you get to pick the group you're following today, the threesome you're following today. What's your dream threesome of players to follow, watch them hit golf balls for 5 hours?
Oh, my gosh. That's going to need a think. There's so many good ones. I was bummed. I was in China, and I was hoping I was going to get a chance to walk with Rory McIlroy's group, and it just didn't work out. The producer over there, the days didn't work out, and I didn't get to walk with him. But Rory's number one. He would be number one on the list. I love watching Ricky Fowler play. Love walking with Ricky. Number one, he is one of the nicest men you'll ever meet, and one of the most gracious people that I've ever met in the game, for such a young man who's got so many things going for him. But he's just talented beyond all belief. And there's another guy you can add to the list who I think could have had a chance to have a breakthrough season, by the way. And I'm waiting for him to do that. He's definitely got the talent. So those would be two guys for sure. And then the third guy, you know, honestly, I'd want a dichotomy, because there you got two powerful players who can move the ball any direction, do anything with. I'd want to watch Zach Blair.
Zach Blair.
Crazy as that sounds.
That would have been like 150-1 on the Vegas board, in my opinion. I don't think I would have had him super high on
Zach Blair for a number of reasons. Number one, Zach, I really like Zach. And number two, he's got to get it done a different way. And I love to see the dichotomy between games when I'm walking with a group, a short hitter who's straight, who's hitting hybrids from 220 yards to 230 yards. Versus a guy who's hitting a 4-iron from 230 yards. You know, I love to see, and yet they can shoot the same score, or the guy who's hitting the hybrid from 230 yards can beat the guy who's hitting the 4-iron from 230 yards or the 5-iron from 230 yards. That's what I love. I love to see the dichotomy in a group. You know, it's fun to watch three guys who just wail on it and beat it out there, because that wasn't the game that I played. But I love to see the Mutt and Jeff look, as it will be, you know.
Yeah.
So I think it would be that would be one threesome that I would find very interesting to watch.
Give me your pick on this. More likely to happen. Jordan Spieth wins two more green jackets in his career, or Phil Mickelson wins one more green jacket?
Oh, Jordan wins two more green jackets. He's got more time. Phil's 46 years old. He's going to be 47 this next year. Father Time's undefeated.
You're going to be eating those words when 57-year-old Phil Mickelson is getting a green jacket from somebody that's like 11 years old right now that won it the year before. I appreciate your time. I got to ask one final question to you that I'm trying to implement this. And I asked Justin Thomas this last week, and I wanted to ask you, who's the most famous person you've ever asked for their autograph?
Oh my gosh. What'd Justin say?
Justin said MJ. He said Michael Jordan. He said he did it recently. He had a jersey. He was going to put it up in his new house, and he had MJ ask it. But I'm thinking more if you were a 12-year-old kid, you know, asking Nicholas for an autograph or something like that. I think mine would be Nolan Ryan. So is there anybody that comes to mind?
You know, I was never an autograph hound as a kid. I don't even remember asking guys for autographs, because really the only golf tournament I attended as a kid was, as a teenager actually, was the U.S. Open in 1992. I didn't even really go down for the AT&T when I was a kid, because my mom didn't want to drive down there, take me down there. So, you know, it was, I don't know if I have one actually. I might have asked for an autograph in the last 10 or 15 years as a professional, from one professional to another professional. But I don't even remember, because I don't really get starstruck. The last time I got starstruck but couldn't ask for an autograph was in 2008 on the practice green, on the par 3 green at Augusta, practice putting green. And I'm playing in back of the big three. And Mr. Palmer looks up at me, and I've been having my hand issues, and he looks up at me, and Mr. Palmer goes, hey, you still having problems with your hand? And that was my only opportunity to really have a one-on-one with him in my career, now that I look back on it. And, I said, yes, sir, Mr. Palmer. And I so wanted to ask those three for their autograph, but I just, it's Augusta National. You just can't do that right there. Even as a player, I didn't want to do it. But yeah, that's, I can't believe I haven't asked anybody for their autograph, but I don't get starstruck a lot to where the point where I want that person's autograph.
Hey, that's not a bad thing. It's, the autograph thing is interesting. I just, sometimes people, it's funny when you talk to these young kids now. I mean, Tiger was, hit their idol when they were like 15, it's just, it's a different world, especially with professional golf, Aaron. I really appreciate it. Good luck at Pebble Beach. You're headed to Pebble Beach to play some golf. I know you said you haven't been playing a ton of golf, but gotta go out there and slap it around.
I'm gonna need some help next week, big guy. There's no doubt. Well, it's been a little ugly this year. Haven't been able to play in practice as much as I like.
You're a busy guy. You got a job, man. You got a job. You got the kids.
I do.
I have some stuff to do. Well, I appreciate
the
time.
I appreciate you having me on.
Oh, for sure. We'll definitely catch up next season at some point. Good luck, and we'll catch up again when you get back to Phoenix.
You got it. Thanks a lot.
And that'll do it for this week's podcast. Many thanks to Aaron Oberholzer. He was great. Love chatting with that guy. A reminder, follow us on Twitter at Shane Bacon, at The Clubhouse Pod. You can email us. If you have questions, you can email us at theclubhousewithshanebacon@gmail.com. I always love getting emails from you guys, just little comments, questions, or just points you guys have. Send those in. Always love getting them. If you love the podcast, do me a favor. Go on iTunes, write a review. Give it a rating. Hopefully it's a 4. Hopefully it's a 5. I wish there was a 6. You could do that as well. But do that if you don't mind. It helps us out a lot. Again, many thanks to Aaron. I will be in Vegas. I get back. I have a few days to rest before Bandon Dunes 2016. You guys have a great weekend. Make some birdies. Hit them straight.